Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three of us, non-historians, pick a year at random and we try to learn things about it. And I'm Ant, and I'm here with my two friends, Anna and Will.
Hello.
Hi.
Good. I don't know why we do that still.
I think it's great, although every time we do it, when one of us says, I'm here with my two friends, I wonder if people think, are those their only two friends?
Well, they are.
They are.
Anyway, this week we're talking about the year 1917.
Banger.
And so what we need to do now is the three-word previews. So please, Will, what is your three-word preview?
Trip to Mexico.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Anna?
Mine is mysterious, maligned, mistaken. Mexico.
Mexico. And mine is New Jersey conspiracy.
Oh, wow. There are so many I can think of.
Yeah, for sure. Today, I'm going to talk about a conspiracy theory for a change, which is my favorite.
It actually
favorite.
Has been a while.
It has
since
been a
you
while.
Talked
I've been talking too factual.
Yeah.
And we're going to get real deep, deep into a conspiracy in New Jersey. And this one does indeed take place in New Jersey, USA, in a place called Kingsland, which is now called Lyndhurst. It renamed itself post, I'm assuming.
Oh, a rebrand.
Yeah. Do you know Lyndhurst, New Jersey?
I can lie and say, sure, I've heard of it.
I'm assuming you know all the small towns.
Every single
in
one.
The US.
All of them.
Anyway, picture the scene. It is January the 11th, 1917.
The petrochemical refineries are churning out pollution.
You're getting pretty close.
Oh, really?
You're pretty close.
Okay, okay.
You're pretty close. We're right on the cusp of the US joining the First World War. And the sentiment is largely anti-German at this stage, pretty pro-Europe and pretty pro-Russian, which is a market change from today. But there are a lot of detractors about entering the war. It's expensive. It's a war. Wars generally aren't like a super good idea.
whoa. All of history would beg to differ.
Yeah, and I mean, they keep coming back to it. But the US is supplying arms and ammunition to the European powers. Notably, Russia, they're providing bombshells for their artillery. And one of the large ammunition manufacturer plants was in Kingsland, New Jersey.
Oh, it's actually about a plant.
It is about a manufacturing plant.
Good job, Jersey, living up to your stereotype.
And this is this is one which is called, bizarrely, I have no idea why, but it's called the Canadian Car and Foundry Company.
Oh.
Yeah, so they do Canadian cars and, I guess, foundries.
Foundries.
Yeah, for forges and stuff. And this is their munitions plant in particular, which is what you need to have to make artillery, I'm assuming. They make artillery shells and other kind of bomb paraphernalia. I'm assuming like the ramrods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how artillery works after Master and Commander is my only reference
point. Yeah, you've
got
the lollipop stick you bang there.
Then the fluffy one to rinse it out.
Yeah. You got the guy that lights the fuse.
Oh, yeah. And then, exactly. All that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, January 11th would be the last day for this particular munitions factory.
Oh, no.
Because a fire broke out at the plant.
Ooh.
Leading to a series of massive explosions that destroy the facility, which is like just not good.
No, I would say a fire at an ammunitions plant is going to be
top three
bad places to have a fire.
Yeah. Miraculously, though, there were no fatalities.
How about any futilities?
There were no futilities or fatalities. There was no fatalities.
Oh, that's actually shocking.
It is shocking, and I'll tell you why in a second.
Okay.
The explosion caused significant damage and thousands of workers were left unemployed after this. So it was a big impact just in the local community. And I have a few excerpts from a newspaper at the time to sort of go into detail of how bad the explosion was.
Mm.
The explosion was really bad. No.
I was going to ask him if you could read them in like an old-timey newspaper man voice.
You see the explosion real... No, I can't. Oh, no, that's really bad.
It was a good try, though.
So whatever happened, the building was in flames in an instant. 10 minutes passed before the first and mightiest explosion. In those 10 minutes, panic broke loose in the plant. It is believed that there were 1,400 men working in the factory. Each of these realized what would happen if fire caught hold of any of a dozen isolated buildings. Then came the first great roar. It is said that a building in which the loaded shells were stored was the first to go. The terrible blast spread the panic, which had hitherto been confined to the factory yard, to Kingsland and the adjoining village of Lyndhurst.
Mm.
After the first detonation came the steady roll of bursting shrapnel and high explosive shells. In a minute, the little Jersey town was transformed into villages upon the European battlefront.
They really juiced up the drama. Yeah.
But that it just kind of shows the scenes of chaos. I mean, like, if you can imagine this massive industrial ammunition producing place going up in flames.
It'd be terrifying.
So why did everyone live? 1,400 men. Because of one woman.
God.
Allegedly. One. not God. That's silly. And God's obviously a man. There was a woman named Teresa Louise Tessie McNamara. And she worked at the switchboard of this ammo facility. And she's credited with saving the 1,400 lives. Despite the fire raging, she stayed at her post at the switchboard and called every single building. And so, you know, the whole old-timey, like, you plug in a thing,
plug in the new one.
So it wasn't even, like, dialing a load of numbers. She had, like, physically, like, connect wires and stuff like that. And she stayed there in spite of being told to go. And she gave them the warning, which she called them up and said, get out or go up. Which is a real...
Okay, like, so I appreciate how pithy that is. But in the moment, if someone screams to me down the phone, get out or go up, I'd be like, go up where?
Back in those days, though, those kind of pithy retorts and stuff were really... Like, you know,
especially from a dame.
Exactly.
There's a broad on the phone telling me to go up.
So slip the Mickey to the gym, whatever, that kind of stuff.
Tess.
So as a result, though, no one died. The workers could flee across the frozen Hackensack River to safety.
Yeah, and, I have heard of that river.
It's a great river. I think that's where they did Hackensack comes from there.
That's right.
So now we get to the cause and the conspiracy and the cause of the fire that led to the explosion and has been subject to debate and conspiracy theories ever since that date.
It was old Tessie McNamara.
Maybe it was her.
It was an inside job.
Maybe it was. Well, and the conspiracy theories, and it is plural, and we might even make some more today. Why not? Who knows? They're pretty fascinating. At the time, the first thought that this was the plot of a German saboteur.
Mm.
Yeah.
Who had... obviously.
Well, the look on Will's face this whole time has been like, I'm just waiting for this.
So the idea was that...
I mean, it was a world war and it was an ammunition factory.
Yeah, supplying the enemy.
But the US was not in the war at this point.
No. Well, no, supplying, not at this point.
1917, January, you said?
January, on the cusp.
Later April.
Very cusp.
Yeah, cusp.
So they were cusping real hard, but they weren't just right in there just yet. But the idea was that a German saboteur who may have infiltrated the plant and then caused it to go up in an attempt to disrupt the supply chain of the ammo that's being sent to fight the Germans and the Tsar.
That seems legit.
Yeah. So, and the Germans did have form for this. You know, they've been known to dabble in subterfuge because in 1916, again in Jersey City, at the Black Tom munitions depot, there was an explosion that had been attributed to German sabotage as well. So there is sort of form to this.
Yeah, I'm convinced.
However, during the course of the investigation by the Department of Justice and the Bureau of Investigation, which would go on to become the Federal Bureau of Investigation, they did discover several employees were German nationals.
Uh-oh.
Some of whom...
So they did it, right?
Kill them!
Well, so we'll get to that now. But some of whom were then subsequently arrested and interned as enemy aliens, as they were known. So like they were interned these after doing...
So they came from outer space?
Wait.
Which conspiracy
Hold
is that?
On that point, because we're going to get there.
Oh, wow.
So it's easy to draw that conclusion that it was the Germans looking back because... You know, the Americans did enter the war on the side of the Allies, and this did happen after this. You know, it's easy to look back and say this is the cause. But it's not the single thing that pushed them over the edge. It's just one of the many geopolitical reasons. So there were other conspiracy theories afoot, though, which I'm a big fan of. Some thought that this was perhaps a false flag operation.
Uh-oh.
Whereby, to spur the national debate into an anti-German sentiment and to launch into World War One, the hawks and you know, in the deep state, were going to you know, set this on fire, set this thing, and say, "Oh, look at those! Oh, bloody Germans!
Yeah,
you know,
let's get them riled up."
Yeah, exactly. Others thought that perhaps this was an insurance scam, or an attempt to push up the price of munitions by the Canadian Car and Foundry Company, you know, reduce the supply, increase the demand.
Classic Canada, those grifters.
Classic macroeconomics, I would say, yeah. But wait, there is yet one more conspiracy theory, and it's my favorite.
Does it involve the Medicis?
Nope. Aliens.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Some enlightened people think that some alien force or higher powers decided to blow up the ammo dump in an attempt to prevent the US from entering the war or choking the supply of ammo in favor of the Germans. So they thought that some pro-German aliens existed or anti-war aliens.
True.
And this is like actual aliens.
Yeah, two rival factions of aliens. It was a big explosion. It could have been both acting.
They could have been... Like two normally warring factions of aliens have united for this
common cause.
Yeah. I see.
Enemy of my enemy is my friend. so people actually do think that.
God,
which is
Americans.
A bit, you know, just interesting. So the Bureau of Investigation's investigation. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
No,
but anyway, their investigation concluded.
Right. Yeah.
They found no evidence of aliens, obviously.
That's an inside job.
But they actually found no evidence of sabotage or German interference or involvement in any way. And so they concluded, you know, of course the feds are going to say, no aliens here, guys. That was probably caused by a workman's hammer creating a spark that ignited some flammable waste.
What?
Now, I don't need to be a detective to say that probably is what could have happened. You know, I don't think they really looked at this too hard, to be honest.
Oh, but come on. A workman's hammer creating a spark, that must happen hundreds of times a day.
Of course. Yeah. I think they really needed to release the emails, you know, and then we can see for ourselves.
Absolutely. Let's get into that server.
We all know, though. I'm rooting for aliens, right? But the one kind of interesting twist in this, though, in this conspiratorial tale, is that while the feds couldn't pin it on the Germans, in 1934, the Germans were up in court for reparations for it. So a chap took them to court on behalf of New Jersey, and the Germans denied it for years. They had any involvement in this whatsoever.
Yeah.
But finally, in the 1950s, they settled.
Wow.
And they settled for $50 million.
Jesus.
Just paid to
New Jersey?
I can't remember Lindhurst the specific guy, but, you know.
Yeah, wow.
This guy that took the court case on behalf of New Jersey and the Canadian Car Company. But they never admitted guilt to it.
Yeah.
But yet they settled and paid.
To make it go away.
Yeah, because they're trying to cover up for the aliens.
That's a thinker.
They're alien deity overlords.
Yeah. $50 million, famously, to aliens is 17.5 blork bucks.
Defund the aliens, is what I'm saying.
Thank you for being brave enough to say that.
Hang on, so how much is a blork buck worth now?
In 2023.
In 2023. Yeah.
In 2023.
Thanks, Obama, who is actually the name of the alien president.
Anyway, that is the end of my conspiratorial tale of what happened in New Jersey in 1917 when an ammo dump blew up, and I've really made a mountain of a molehill of a very, very small event. So you're totally
welcome.
You sure
did. Well
of
done.
All the things that happened in 1917, I chose this ridiculous thing.
I feel like that is good whenever we get these really big years. You should choose the stupidest thing that happened.
Yeah, and thankfully no one died as well.
Exactly.
And fair play to Tessie. Like,
love Tessie.
She really stuck it to the...
She's definitely working with the aliens.
Explosion.
Get out or go up.
Get out or go up. Hold on, just changing my Tinder profile. Today, I'm talking about a woman named Margareta Gertruida Zeller, whom you may know as Mata Hari.
Oh, yes. I don't know anything about Mata Hari. I just know that she existed.
Yeah.
And she was a woman.
Exactly. And maybe one other word you associate with her?
Dutch.
Sexy.
Great. But both are good. I was looking for spy.
Yeah.
Sexy Dutch spy.
Basically. So I'm glad we're all working from the same base layer of information, which is that she was a woman and she existed. And she was Dutch. She was born in the Netherlands in 1876. And when she was 18, she saw an advertisement in a newspaper by a Captain Rudolph MacLeod, who was living in the Dutch East Indies and looking for a wife.
Oh.
And she answered the ad. And 4 months later, they were married.
Wow.
And she moved to Indonesia.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is...
So she answered a classified ad.
Like a Lonely Hearts ad.
That's amazing.
I know.
Good for
them. I'm wondering if those still exist.
They do.
Okay, well, I will see you guys in 4 months.
I'm off to Indonesia.
Now, this might surprise you, but it turns out that an older man soliciting a younger woman through a newspaper ad did not lead to wedded bliss. Rudolph was a very bad man. He was an alcoholic. He was abusive. The doctors diagnosed him with tropical frenzy. Which is like just the most 19th century disease I can think of.
Was the treatment like cocaine and laudanum or something?
Exactly. What he definitely did have was syphilis, which he did give to Margareta. And then she gave to her children. And that was very sad. But when she wasn't caring for syphilitic children or escaping her husband, she used her time in Indonesia to study Indonesian culture and join a local dance company.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1897, she took the artistic name Mata Hari, which means eye of the day or like the sun in the local Malay language. And eventually the couple make it back to the Netherlands where they divorce. Yay. Mm-hmm. There's a custody battle and Mata Hari is trying to get money to get her daughter back. And she starts trying to earn it respectably. She mm-hmm. gives piano lessons. She teaches German and she does some modeling for a department store. She performed as a circus horse rider for a bit.
I thought you were going to say she performed as a circus horse.
Yeah, she is. Times are tough.
Yeah,
but,
all circuses can afford horses.
That's right. Some need haris. But then she moves into modeling for painters, which is the nice way of saying she's a nude model.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I was a nude model once.
Okay, gonna flag that.
I mean,
one.
No one was drawing me, but I was at the bus stop. People were taking pictures. It's the same thing.
That's true. That's fair. That's art.
You should have moved straight on.
I'd actually like to dig into that deeper. So, as she's modeling for painters now, she's starting to make contacts in the art and the theater world. And in 1904, she becomes, much like you, Aunt, an exotic dancer. She's basically an overnight sensation, and her act is her as this Javanese princess. She's working lots of Oriental motifs into her act. Her jewelry, her costumes are very sort of Indonesian and Asian inspired. She dances at La Scala in Milan and the opera in Paris, and she's seen as the one who really elevates erotic dance to respectable status.
I'd be lost without her.
I know. Yeah, you do credit her with a lot of your...
Yeah, I do really have to, yeah.
So she's mingling in these very posh circles and she's posing for many provocative photos. But by 1910, lots of imitators have cropped up and they're all kind of devaluing the art. And so critics are now saying that erotic dancing is cheap exhibitionism rather than anything sort of high art or something to be esteemed. Her career goes into decline. And in 1915, she performs her last show. But at this point, she's made so many good contacts that she becomes a courtesan. And she has relationships with lots of important people in the military and politics, all the kind of, you know, tutti frutti. No, that's not what it's called.
Tutti frutti
people that you'd expect. And she's traveling all over Europe with these men. And so she starts to get a reputation as a promiscuous woman and a dangerous seductress.
Ooh, a dangerous seductress. Yeah. That is exactly what you want to be described as.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she's kind of the early prototypical femme fatale, right?
Yeah,
So World War I breaks out. Mata Hari becomes involved with a Russian pilot serving with the French, but in summer 1916, he's shot down. And she wants to go see him in a battlefield hospital, but the French won't allow her near the front because she's from a neutral country, which I guess was a thing. She's Dutch, the Netherlands are neutral. Instead, agents from the Deuxième Bureau, which was French military intelligence, tell her that she can see him if she agrees to spy for the French, which is like a weird bargain. But they also offer her €1 million, which is nice.
Okay, yep.
And the target of her espionage is Crown Prince Wilhelm of Germany, Prussia, whom she had performed for several times before the war.
I mean, that's quite punchy.
Like, oh, yeah.
You want to be
a spy, go get...
Who do you want me to be? Like some sort of low-level officer, the postman?
Go get the guy.
Get the guy.
Yeah, get the crown prince. And Deuxième Bureau thought that he was this really important piece of the military puzzle. He is nominally a senior general, but in reality, he's a playboy, a womanizer, he's a drunk, he has very little to do with the army, and all of the stories about him in the media were just propaganda.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Meant to emphasize that Kaiser Wilhelm had a strong line of succession. But French military intelligence did not know this.
Yeah.
So great job, French military intelligence.
Well, the French military intelligence are renowned for being very, very good. So
I refuse to comment on the French military intelligence or they will not pay me my 1 million francs.
You stay away from the king.
So anyway, they think he's this big fish. They task Mata Hari with seducing him and getting information about German battle plans. She agrees, and she makes her way to Madrid to arrange a meeting with a German military attaché named Arnold Kalle, K-A-L-L-E, asking if he could then introduce her to the Crown Prince and arrange this meeting. And this is where things start to get murky. Apparently, at this point, she also offered to sell French secrets to the Germans. However, it's unclear if she was offering those secrets as a way to get the meeting or if she just wanted the money and was willing to be a double agent. In December 1916, French intel lets her get the name of 6 Belgian agents, one of whom was a double agent for Germany and France. Mm. And 2 weeks after she receives this information, the Germans execute the double agent. So the French are very suspicious that Mata Hari has passed on the name.
why are they giving her names in the first place?
Yeah, it's really unclear.
Like, I would assume that if you're going to be like, hey, we're going to recruit to be an agent. It's like, yeah. Okay, that sounds good. By the way, here's a bunch of secrets.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone, though.
Well, it's a little bit of like, so she's clearly not a trained spy. And so I'm guessing it was probably some sort of miscommunication of, all right, is she literally just a honeypot, like, go seduce this guy?
A lot of the skills.
Or do we need to give her something to dangle in front of them, you know?
Or they're trying to test her.
Or maybe she seduced one of them. I don't know. She's a promiscuous woman.
Dangerous seductress.
Like it. As it says on my tramp stamp. So
in Comic Sans MS.
I would never. In January 1917, the German guy, Major Kalle, transmitted coded messages to Berlin describing the very helpful activities of a spy referred to as H21 and giving details that clearly identified to anyone listening that this was Mata Hari. But those messages were sent in a code that the Germans knew the French had already broken.
Mm-hmm.
So were the Germans intending to give her up?
Uh-huh.
Or are we now in another sort of loop of murkiness?
Or maybe they were trying to throw suspicion off her.
Yeah.
There's a whole load of double bluffing, triple bluffing, octuple bluffing at this point.
Wow. But apparently the chief of German intelligence was annoyed with Mata Hari for not giving him any worthy intel. She had only just like told him who was sleeping with whom. And that wasn't good enough for him. So he decided to terminate her employment by exposing her as a German spy, which is a way to do it.
Yep.
So the French are pissed about this. They think it's enough to arrest her. So they do. They charge her with espionage. In July 1917, the trial commences. And from the get-go, it's pretty farcical. The deck is stacked against her. French and British intelligence suspect her of spying for Germany, but neither of them can produce any definitive evidence. One of her prosecutors says that because she was dubiously portraying the persona of Mata Hari in her act rather than just being her regular Dutch self, that means she's a dishonest character.
Mm, fair.
Which is legit. That's why I yell at any actress who plays somebody other than herself. Her handler from the French bureau tampered with evidence to help prove her guilt, and her lawyer was denied permission to cross-examine any witnesses.
Doesn't sound like a super fair trial.
Yeah. Now, Mata Hari did admit that she had accepted 20,000 francs from a German diplomat who was a former lover.
Who hasn't?
I know. Without 20,000 francs from a German diplomat cast the first stone.
All my ex-German diplomatic lovers have paid me to never talk to them again.
I do appreciate that they all pay you with francs as well. It's entirely useless spend this in France. Currency. But she claimed that that was reimbursement for possessions that had been taken by the German authorities. Mm. She vehemently denied that she was a spy. She declared her passionate love for France. But the prosecution accused her of revealing details about their new weapon, the tank.
Oh.
Saying that the information she had leaked had caused the death of 50,000 soldiers. But no one could identify any specific detail or any battle that had been lost because of anything she had said.
Yeah.
Ultimately, she was convicted and sentenced to death.
Well, yeah, the evidence was clear. Black and white.
It's an open and shut case.
Better safe than sorry.
So after spending a few months malnourished in a vermin-infested prison, she was executed by a firing squad on the 15th of October, 1917. She wasn't bound, she refused a blindfold, and she defiantly blew a kiss to the men before they fired, which, say what you will about her.
Pretty badass.
Pretty badass.
Was it hard to shoot her, though, because she kept on...
She kept on, like, moving her body, and there's like, the bullets can't... I'm sorry, she did die. In the years since she's died, her case has been endlessly debated, and it seems like there's a growing consensus that she wasn't actually a spy, but rather a scapegoat that the French badly needed to deflect from the way the war was going for them. Because earlier in 1917, there had been several huge mutinies by French soldiers. There were strikes all across the country. And a new government led by Clemenceau was elected and had really vocally committed to winning the war. And so Mata Hari was held up by this government as an example of what might happen if your morals were too loose.
Yeah, I can sort of, I can sort of see that as a good poster.
Yeah, you know, like, like, she stepped out of line, but if you're a good French citizen, you know.
But it just seems like vaguely kind of like anti-woman.
Oh, totally. And like, you know, oh, like, the whole, I haven't whole even thing. Scratched the surface of the anti-woman stuff. I don't want to get a reputation. As being pro-woman.
As being a woman.
And since the war, various governments have released documents about her, none of which clearly exonerate her, but none of which definitively prove her guilt. The German government actually exculpated her in 1930. So unlike with your guy, they cleared her name. They didn't just sort of settle it and hope it went away. And the Mata Hari Foundation, which might be biased, says that at most she was a, quote, low-level spy who provided no secrets to either side. But whatever you believe, she was executed. There were, of course, rumors that the executioners had fired blanks and she had escaped. However, her body was, in fact, donated to the Museum of Anatomy in Paris, who then embalmed her head. However, in the year 2000, archivists at the museum realized that the head had gone missing and remains missing to this day.
No way.
Yeah.
Do you think she'll
still be alive?
She's probably still alive, yeah.
She's probably still alive. But if not, if you're listening and you have Mata Hari's head, let us know.
Yeah, I'll just give it back. I don't want to know. Just give it back,
just
honestly.
Just give it back.
Yeah. Goes anyway, to show.
So yeah. That's the story of Mata Hari, which I had known very, very, very little about.
No, I didn't know anything about either.
Yeah.
But I will never hire an exotic dancer to be an agent of mine. Ever.
Ever again.
You will still hire exotic dancers, though.
Oh, yes. And I hope to be hired myself as either an exotic dancer, a spy, or both.
Yeah. Very, very favorable rates. So you just find it on our website, randomlygeneratedhistoryclub.com.
Yeah. /careers.
/careers/join our team. Good.
Okay, this week I'm in North America, and we're talking about a spot of bother between a country called the United States of America and another country called Mexico.
Yay.
No one in America says a spot of bother, Will. You have to call it a rootin' tootin' shootout.
And specifically this rootin' tootin' shootout.
Nailed it.
Is one between the United States and a guy called Pancho Villa.
Uh-huh.
Who, and we're talking specifically about...
Me too.
Ant also knows about history.
So this is the Pancho Villa expedition, which was a punitive foray by the US into Mexico.
Reading his thesaurus.
To deal with a troublesome rebel. Mm-hmm. His name is Pancho Villa. Okay. That's the Villa. That's the name of the or the rebel. And this trouble between the US and Pancho Villa had been growing since about October 1915, when the US government officially recognized Villa's rival ally, a guy called Venustiano Carranza, as head of the government in Mexico. And then the US followed up by recognizing him with also providing him rail transportation within the US from Eagle Pass in Texaco. Texaco?
Texaco is a service station in America. So
yes. Yeah. From Eagle Pass in Texas.
Yeah.
Texas, which is part of the United States of America, yeah. To Douglas, Arizona. So basically helping this other guy's Mexican forces.
They just gave him like rail fare.
giving him and all his troops.
They gave him like a Ural pass.
Giving his 5,000 troops rail transportation to move rapidly across and in safety to try and outflank Pancho Villa. And
so the Pancho Villa's rival
exactly.
is supported by the US.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So basically there'd been an ongoing civil war effectively in Mexico for about 5 years, and then the US finally picked a side and backed the other side that wasn't Pancho Villa.
Yeah.
And then gave him logistical support. And then unsurprisingly, because of this support, Villa then lost the Battle of Agua Prieta, which is a big decisive battle, and basically lost the whole
any prospect of being able to take over Mexico with his forces.
Okay.
Yeah. So as a result of that, he was naturally feeling like somewhat betrayed by the US by all of this. And so Villa began attacking US nationals and property in northern Mexico in reprisal. And then on the 26th of November 1915, Villa sent a force to attack the city of Nahalis and in the ensuing battle engaged the American forces that were there before withdrawing. And then in January 1916, 16 American employees of the American Smelting and Refining Company were removed from a train. What do they do?
Yeah.
Were they smelters or refiners? It makes a big difference.
These people were smelters.
Okay. Well, whoever smelt it.
Oh, gosh almighty.
Gets shot by Pancho Villa.
Yeah, so they were stripped and executed.
Oh, no.
So they were indeed dealt it.
And no. You look like a terrible person.
And then in March 1916, finally, Villa's troops attacked Columbus, New Mexico, and Camp Furlong, which is there, which is the U.S. Army post there, with about 240 soldiers stationed there. And as a result of that attack, 10 civilians and 8 soldiers on the U.S. side were killed. And the raiders burnt basically the whole town. They stole some horses and some mules, seized a bunch of machine guns, and then fled back to Mexico. And Villa's forces had also taken a bunch of people dead. They took about 67 dead and dozens more wounded because the U.S. had machine guns, which they weren't like...
I'm assuming the U.S. then just kind of left them alone and said, okay, fine, fair is fair, we're quits now.
Then the U.S. built a wall and made Mexico pay for it. That's typically the next step.
No, this was more active.
Oh.
So it's fair to say by this point that the U.S. were pretty pissed by this whole situation. So the next day, the Southern Department of the Army, there's a commanding general there called General Funston.
Okay, sorry, that's a very dumb name.
And he recommended the immediate pursuit back into Mexico of the force that had attacked attacked America.
Yeah.
And so when Woodrow Wilson concurred and asked a guy called General Pershing to command the force, who later led troops in Europe.
I was
going to
say, he's very famous.
Yeah, he's a big name.
Okay.
Woodrow Wilson, when releasing a statement to the press later that day, said, "An adequate force will be sent at once in pursuit of Villa with the single object of capturing him and putting a stop to his forays."
Yeah, so he is like, he's probably our most academic president ever. I think he was the president of Princeton before he was the president of the US.
Is that right?
I think so. So anyway, he speaks like that all the time.
Wilson went on, "This can and will be done in entirely friendly aid to the constituted authorities in Mexico and with scrupulous respect for the sovereignty of that republic." And of course, but the truth here was that the US was unilaterally invading
country.
So it's like, it's not that respectful of the sovereignty.
Yeah, you could say the same thing about like...
But if you use enough fancy words, then people won't know.
If you say it's respectful,
invade your country.
Yeah. Exactly. So it wasn't obviously, therefore it wasn't that simple. And even though they were going to go and quell this rebellion by Villa, basically they were just sauntering into Mexico and pissing off everyone on every side in the whole Mexican conflict. And anyway, so Pershing assembled this an expeditionary force about 8,000 people, and they marched over the border and they set up base in Chihuahua State. And then they would then send out columns in lots of different directions to try and find Pancho Villa and his forces. And and Villa by this stage had a 6-day head start on the pursuit. But he was still caught. He wasn't caught personally, but his forces were caught up with very, very quickly. And there are a bunch of attacks from the US cavalry columns onto his forces after they'd like recklessly basically stopped to attack another garrison, which they didn't need to do. Mm. And then there are a whole series of encounters between the two sides. So as the US columns pushed deeper into Mexico, they kept on encountering some of Villa's forces. But then the deeper they went, the more they pissed off the Carranza government, which is the other side in Mexico.
Yeah. Who they had earlier backed. Yeah, okay. So they're just winning a lot of friends.
Mexico. Exactly. And eventually it started to get really messy. So on April 12th, 1916, a guy called Major Frank Tompkins, who's part of the expeditionary force, had a group of about 128 men, and they were attacked by an estimated 500 Mexican troops from the Carranza's side.
Well, right, okay, so they'd wade in.
And the US then was desperate to try and avoid this straight-up engagement between them and
the government of the country they had invaded.
Right, because they didn't want like an outright full-on war, which of course they've previously in American history had with Mexico.
Yeah.
And so as a result, there a couple of Americans were killed, and the Carrancistas lost about 14 on their side. But basically, it was a low-level skirmish. But it was enough of a problem that the Americans were just like, okay, need to calm this down now.
Yeah.
So the US slowed everything down. They're a bit more chill in how they went about operations, like smaller columns, a bit more static. And they tried to like get some diplomacy going with the Mexicans, who are now like
proper pissed. Yeah.
So the patrolling continued, and there were still some clashes, but it was all a bit lower key. And then Carranza's government basically said to the Americans, okay, get out of Mexico now. or we will kick you out by force, and we don't care whether you're trying to attack the rebels or not, just leave.
Yeah.
And so Pershing steadily withdrew further and further north, and the Mexican forces were clashing with them now at this point every few days.
Wow.
And so in a way it's like just very reminiscent of America's later behavior of just like finding itself embroiled in these unexpectedly very complicated situations.
We just want to spread democracy.
Yeah.
Sure.
And conduct occasional punitive expeditions.
Yeah. You can't have one without the other.
So by this stage, they're really just trying to get out as soon as possible while saving face. Mm. And the whole thing about like capturing Pancho Villa and making him pay for what he did was just kind of forgotten by this point. And so Pershing was finally ordered to completely withdraw on January 18th, 1917. And overall, the expedition managed to hit many of Villa's important subordinates. They killed about 170 of the men who had attacked Columbus originally.
Okay. Well.
But it failed to capture Villa. But on the other hand, Villa's troops never actually attacked America again. So it's one of these like ambiguous outcomes.
Yeah.
Maybe wasn't really worth it, but kind of worth it kind of things.
Let's put up a mission accomplished banner. Yeah. Why not?
There definitely was a mission accomplished banner.
But they got away without provoking a full-scale war with Mexico as well. So I don't know. So obviously the Americans claim victory. The Mexicans claim victory for pushing them out. And then in a massive context switch, of course, only 3 months later, the US weighed into the First World War.
Yeah.
And is that right? 3 months later?
April.
Yeah.
But are you going to talk about the Zimmerman telegram at all?
I'm not going to talk about the Zimmerman telegram. Would you like to?
Well, I might get it wrong, but basically the Zimmerman telegram was Germany sending a telegram to Mexico saying, if you join our side and we win, we'll give you back the American Southwest.
Yeah.
So like that probably sounded pretty good to Mexico at this point, having just repelled the Americans from their territory. And
did they ever get the Southwest?
They took it back. Yeah. Yeah, that's why if you go to California, you have to bring your passport.
Ah. Okay, thanks for joining us. That is everything you'd ever need to know about the year 1917.
All right, so all that's left to do is for us to get a new year from the random number generator, hopefully one that is less full of history and more full of goofy stuff. Will, can you beseech the RNG to grant us a wish?
Absolutely. I'm just stuffing it full of alien currency.
It's like a pachinko machine.
Wow, Bork Bucks.
Yeah, Bork Bucks.
Good for you. Got that cash to splash.
And next week's year is 1430.
1430.
The year America was discovered. Nope. The year...
First Easter egg.
The first Easter egg was discovered.
You'll have to tune in and find out. All right, 1430.
Cool.
Going to be great.
See you next week.
Toodle pip.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.